This is KDNK, Carbondale Community Access Radio, Glenwood Springs, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley, and beyond. All right, everybody. Stay tuned. We will soon get into Express Yourself. It's Friday afternoon. Welcome to Express Yourself, where arts, culture, and conversation intersect. We are your hosts, Amy Kimberly and
Brian Colley.
And it is First Fridays.
Yay.
Happy First Fridays. So much going on. We've got a new opening at the Launch Pad. There's a great show at the Clay Center. It just feels like spring. They say that March comes in like a lion and goes out like a lamb, but seems pretty lamby to me out there. Anyway, we have a great show lined up. Ali Sanguili will be stopping by later. Brian checks in with the curator of the Nested Roots Show at the R2 Gallery. And we have part two of our interview with Denver drag queen Mirage. So don't touch that dial. Beautiful Friday it is out there, huh, Bri?
I couldn't agree more, Amy.
Oh, my God. I've been sitting outside, and it was hard to come indoors, but we've got a great show lined up. I'm very excited. This month kicks off Imagine Climate 2021. You know, I actually don't even know how many years this thing has been going on. I think only a couple years, three. That's what I thought. Mm-hmm. But it seems to permeate every aspect of our lives now, which is an awesome thing because climate change should be at the forefront of our conversations. So, Bri, tell us a little bit about what is happening at the gallery with the Nested Roots Show, which is part of Imagine Climate 2021.
Yeah, this show is sponsored in part by CORE for their Imagine Climate. It's called Nested Roots. It's a collaboration with CU Boulder. They have a program called NEST, which stands for Nature, Environment, Science, and Technology. It's a studio for the arts at the University of Colorado Boulder. It's a cross-campus network that combines artistic practice and scientific research to explore our common and disparate ways of observing, recording, experimenting, and knowing. So they work a lot with scientists and artists and do a collaboration with the two, and so they're bringing, you know, the right and the left brain together, and really for this show, exploring parts of climate change, whether that's through interviewing people like Bill McKibben through a series of climate chins, which you have to check out, or there's an immersive experience with a program group called Mirror State, where they went to the Salt Flats and did audio recordings. But there's also ceramics and metalwork and photography, all kinds of stuff. So it's a real pleasure to get to work with a group like CU Boulder and see what they've been up to. And also to have a couple of local folks, too, from the Valley be part of the show.
Yeah. It's been. And this show was supposed to go up a year ago. Mm-hmm. But as I have noted in the last show and will probably note again, this is the time when our lives were changing a year ago, and we were really all of a sudden faced with having to pivot. That was the popular word of 2020. And so we held this show off because we were really excited, wanted to make it the best that it could be.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you interviewed a few of the people involved with the show.
Yep. So I've got one today, a couple today. The first, I think we're going to hear from Joanne Guillory. She is the project manager of Nest. Nest has a couple like co-directors, and she was the one that helped me get all the work here. But she's going to talk a little bit about what Nest is and how it came to be and our collaboration together. So please stand by and enjoy.
All right, here we go.
I'm Brian Colley, and I'm here at the Carbondale Arts R2 Gallery, joined by Joanne Guillory of Nest. She is the Nest project manager here from CU Boulder. Joanne, thank you for being here, and I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about Nest.
Yeah, thanks, Brian, for having me. We're really excited to be in Carbondale to install the Roots Show with Nest. And Nest is part of the Grand Challenge initiative at CU Boulder. And Nest really seeks to combine artistic practice, scientific research, to explore the common and disparate ways of observing, recording, explaining, and knowing. So it really is the intersection between the creativity of the arts, but also the intellectual creativity of science.
Yeah, it's a combination of arts and science, which is kind of what this whole show is about. How long has Nest been around? How did that start at CU Boulder?
Yeah, so Nest has been in operation fully for 3 years. It was started with a grant from the Office of Research and Innovation at CU Boulder, and it's part of a Grand Challenge initiative that was nationwide maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay, and how long have you been there? The whole 3 years, I guess?
Oh, yeah, I've been there the whole 3 years.
Yeah.
So this is, I think, maybe the fifth or sixth art installation we've been involved in. It's probably the farthest from CU Boulder. Most of the installations we've done so far have been at CU campus, one in Denver and then a couple in the city of Boulder. But this Carbondale is really part of our outreach to farther distances from CU.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited to have you guys here. We kind of got hooked up, I think, a couple years ago through one of the Creative District Summits through the Colorado Creative Industries. And then we had planned a show back in May of 2020, and of course everything got shut down, so we postponed. But it's great to have you all here. I wonder if you could tell me just a little bit about how you kind of got everyone connected and all the artists and scientists and how you find them.
Sure.
Where do they come from?
Yeah. So two professors at CU Boulder, Tara Knight and Aaron Espili, they're really involved in a lot of creative communities in the whole of Colorado and the nation and even internationally. So they've got connections kind of broadly with artists and scientists. And Jorge is the visiting scholar, and he knows lots of people. He used to work in Miami at a science museum.
And who is Jorge?
Jorge Pierre Perez Gallego, he's the visiting scholar for Nest. And he initially found some of the artists. Some of the artists have contacted us in this current show at Carbondale. One artist is a postdoc at CU. She's combining ceramics and sort of realistic scientific research about global warming. We have a piece and a movie by two professors who made a film with some high school students in Boulder about bird life and how it's impacted and how climate change has impacted bird life. And then there's two graduate students. One's a scientist and one's a comic, and they've written some skits for Chins. And so those are kind of examples of... most of the artists or scientists we work with do have some connection to CU.
Yeah, it's a cool mix, not only of like the artist-science thing, but all kinds of media. We have ceramics and photography and film. Even there are plush dolls and, you know, bird costumes made out of fabric. This show really runs the gamut. Plus, I wonder if you could tell me more about Mirror State. They have some cool stuff going on with their... it's like a video, but sort of some sound recordings, all kinds of cool stuff. Maybe you can elaborate.
Sure. So one of the big successes that Nest has had is funding graduate student fellowships. And we look to fund students who, one comes from the sciences, broadly defined, and one comes from the arts, and that's broadly defined. And last year we funded a woman who is a mezzo-soprano singer and a geologist. And they went to the Salt Flats in Utah, and they... the artist, the singer, she's also a poet. She wrote poetry. The geologist looked for rocks. And then they collaborated with two other artists. One's a musician and one is a photographer. And they created this multi-dimensional experience, really, called Mirror State. And it's a website, but it has music, poetry, photography. They even go into somehow the musician was able to get sounds from the rocks that were found at the Salt Flats. And it's just a super interesting kind of look at, you know, natural resources. The salt from the Salt Flats is consumed by people. It's used at Morton Salt Factory. And then it's just gone through a lot of transition since the beginning of time, really. So it's a really fascinating study. And it was supported by Nest, just as a research fellowship. So the Arbor Institute in Boulder just closed a show on the Mirror State, and they had the whole Mirror State project is on the website. But one piece of it is like a film without much dialogue, and it's just sound and image. And we were able to project it so it was like larger than life. So it was quite cool. But this, if you go to Mirror State, I think mirrorstate.com. You can find, or you can look on the Carbondale Arts website and find the link. And it should really be enjoyed with headphones, because the sound is like travels through space. It's a surround sound experience. So it's really quite cool. It just shows what artists and scientists can do when they collaborate, how they can communicate things about the world and the changes in the environment to just everyone can understand it.
Yeah, I think that's one of the other great things about this show is the collaboration with Carbondale Arts, and Nest and CU Boulder. And it's also sponsored by CORE during their Imagine Climate program this year. So it's all about trying to get people not even just aware of climate change, but, you know, different ways people are approaching how to change it. They're using, you know, art and science, soundscapes. The climate chins are using comedy to address a lot of that. They talked with Bill McKibben, who's a activist in the environment. There's just the whole gamut in this show. So I'm hoping, you know, if you're listening to this show, we're open to the public weekdays from 10 to 5 and up to 8 people at a time. So it's a safe environment. And you can also check it out on carbondalearts.com under our exhibitions. Anything else you want to add, Joanne?
Well, you know, the other interesting piece, there's two photographic studies, one by Matt Smith and one by Christy McCann. And those both are images of forest fires. And that's been a timely issue here regionally because of climate change and the recent fires. And they're very thought-provoking, I think. They're beautiful, but they're also sort of challenging in a way, because it's clear that they came from what clearly was destruction. But it's another way of looking at, well, why is this like this, and what, you know, why did this happen? And look, something beautiful came out of it, but what are the impacts going forward? Mm-hmm. So it's a very thought-provoking. I think the whole show, if you really get immersed in it, it's really quite thought-provoking and provocative.
Thank you. That's good. The photographs are quite thought-provoking, just because the way that Matt put the abacus into the trees, the numbers correspond with, I think, the number of acres burned. Mm-hmm. It's a powerful piece. And I'll hopefully get an interview with him as well. Great. Thank you, Joanne.
You're welcome. Thank you for having Nest in Carbondale. We're really excited to be here, and we hope everybody takes the time to, if they can't make it to Carbondale, at least check it out on the website.
Yes, that was great. It's so fascinating, Brian, because more and more the conversation is coming around to scientists and artists collaborating. That is what's going to save the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Art's going to save the world.
Well, I think it's the combination of art and science, you know?
Yes.
There's a convening coming up of creative districts, and CU Boulder has been working diligently on a paper. I think it's quite a long paper, but how science and arts work together. So this is a great example of it. It's really fun. I will say we have noticed that youth really take to the show. And so if you do have kids out there, it's an important show. There's a lot of interactive opportunities for them. And I think they're pretty familiar with the chins. I think the chins get them. Well, what do we got next, Bri?
I got to sit down with Mark Sazark, who's a local Valley artist. He's one of two local artists in this show. The other is Trace Nichols, who I think we'll have up next week. Mark, if you're not familiar, is a metal artist. He goes out to the dump and collects all kinds of big, heavy metal objects and recreates them in his studio as like wall-hanging works. And in this show, you'll hear in the interview, we talk a bit about his pedestal works, which are a new twist on some things that he's been doing. So take it away.
All right. Here we go. Here's Mark Sazark. You're tuned into KDNK, and this is Express Yourself.
I'm joined here by Mark Sazark, an artist in Carbondale, Colorado. Mark is a metal artist with some new things coming up for this show. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Brian.
Thanks for joining me.
Great to be here.
Yeah. Could you, for the listening audience who may not all be familiar with your wonderful work, could you just describe it in a visual way for everyone?
Yeah, sure. I'm glad to be part of the Nested Roots.
Yeah, the Nested Roots. Yeah.
Yeah, and I have a couple different types of work in the show. I have some wall work that is kind of my usual work I've been doing for over 20 years now, which is basically I recycle found metal from junkyards that I scour around Colorado into wall pieces. So I find the metal, I'll bring it back to my studio, cut it up, collage it together. And so the whole process is like creating a sculpture, but the outcome is more like a painting.
Mm-hmm.
because I'm using power tools and welders and things like that to create the work, but then I'm using painted surfaces that I find, but I don't actually alter the surfaces. They're all strictly just found materials, which I don't alter them because I kind of enjoy the history of the wear and kind of man's use and time and weathering and everything that creates these kind of one-of-a-kind surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the pieces in the show reflect some more kind of environmental issues, I guess. A lot of my work is abstract, some is political, but some of these reflect some environmental issues. There's a piece called Roots that it's kind of hard to explain without seeing it, but if you look at the top of the piece, there's a pine tree, and that pine tree was cut from a dumpster that was meant for recycling. And then below that pine tree is a piece of steel that was cut from a dumpster that had trash in it, and somebody had thrown paint in it, and green paint. And so I collage the two together, and so the paint drips coming down the side of the dumpster kind of reflect, looks like roots from the tree kind of going into the brown earth.
Yeah.
And so for me, it speaks of, you know, paint can be recycled, and, you know, if you throw it in the garbage, it goes into the earth, and the tree kind of becomes a metaphor for, you know, life and environment and people, you know, so anything that goes into the ground can go into our water systems and, you know, just we ingest it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'd seen the piece and I didn't know the story behind that. That's really cool.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, working with this found metal, the surfaces are very unique, and they speak to me. I've just been always influenced by found metal, you know, from an early age, you know, when I started started welding in college. And,
oh, wow.
And then over time, the work just evolved and got more sophisticated. But I love being able to find these surfaces that I can find meaning in. Like now, as I said, they kind of look more painterly, but the fact that there is this history and they become these one-of-a-kind surfaces that take a lot of time and that somebody else actually painted them, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Mm-hmm.
And I can explain about this Graywater piece a little bit, too, which same sort of thing, except it's not a collage, it's a one-panel piece. And Graywater was actually from another dumpster that I found. I don't find a lot of dumpsters, but when I do, they make great art for some reason. I don't know why. But so this one is a rectangle, and it's wall piece, and it's bound steel.
Mm-hmm.
And it has this kind of earth-like quality to it. It has this BFI blue, which is kind of beautiful and atmospheric, and then there's this kind of rounded earth form that has these kind of gray waves that are kind of rippling through the earth section of the piece.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is with that is when that was painted by somebody, it was painted with a spray, and so they did it in like layers kind of, and so the thicker areas of the spray kind of settled with gravity and created these wave-like patterns. So as time went on, the thinner areas of the paint kind of dissipated and rust came through. So it kind of created this wave pattern.
Yeah, it's cool to see the rust coming through all the way to, like, the raw material.
Yeah, and so, and that piece just kind of speaks about, you know, our earth and our oceans and how, you know, the ocean has become a dumping place, and and it's just got this, it kind of has a beauty to it, but it also has this ugliness of this gray waves, you know.
Yeah, gray water. Ooh.
Yeah.
So where do you find all these dumpsters? Where do you go, the junkyards just around the valley?
Different areas. It's all around Colorado, you know, there's some in Montrose and and some. And, it's interesting because it gets kind of harder and harder to find because a lot of places don't allow people in anymore.
Oh, yes.
They're, you know, kind of like people like me who just want to poke around. You know, they're always concerned of somebody getting hurt and suing them or something.
Yeah.
So.
You don't just pull out your artist badge when you pull in.
Yeah. And the only good badge that works actually is pulling out cash.
Oh, that's true.
And they're like, oh, okay, come on in.
And so you must have collected a lot of pieces over the years. Is
your
studio just full of extra pieces of metal?
Yeah, I have a lot of metal that I collected over the years, and that's kind of the interesting part of it is that, you know, I might be choosing a piece that I found years ago to something I just found, so to create like an assemblage.
Mm-hmm.
It's I have my own little junkyard going on.
And then, from what I can tell, you usually put them in rectangular forms and either have them by themselves or you pair them up so it's like sort of a big rectangle all together with different pieces. I know there's a piece in this show, though, that's like a semicircle.
Yeah, I basically just kind of work with what I find. And a lot of the rectangular pieces kind of, you know, as I said, they're kind of like sculptures that, you know, are disguised as paintings, really.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, so different types of forms that I find I use for, you know, different purposes. But yeah, and so the other piece, Green Planet, which is kind of similar, that was actually cut from a fuel truck that was round in the back. And so it has this round piece. And then it's also got these colors on it that, you know, it's called Green Planet, which makes you think, oh, it's green, it's a green environment. But it kind of has this ugly sort of look of, I don't know, decay, I guess you would say.
Wow, that's amazing to find a fuel truck with all those colors. And did you have to, like, take it apart, or was it just kind of like that?
Yeah, just one, it was, you know, yeah, well, I cut the thing apart, but, which I do. But, yeah, no, it was just, you know, one panel, and it's very interesting colors that, again, like, just gets painted layers over years. And then over time, you know, the sun and exposure, you know, those layers start to come out. Like, you'll notice drips and things, and any of the thicker areas of the paint just remain longer than the thinner areas. And the interesting thing out here that the sun is so strong here in the high country that, you know, over time paint will just kind of evaporate. And like back east where it's very wet, you know, you see a lot of chipping and cracking and peeling, but here, like, it just it literally just kind of evaporates over time. And it's quite interesting.
I wonder if you could also talk about some of the other works in this show that are on pedestals or more sculptural.
Absolutely. So started doing some styrofoam pieces, which became similar to the wall pieces, but different. Again, using found material that I found in packaging that came to our home and or studio. And being an environmentalist, I didn't want to throw it out. So, and there's nowhere around here to recycle styrofoam. And styrofoam is, it's a concerning waste hazard in the world environment. You know, it's like plastic. And you know, scientists say that if, you know, if you throw styrofoam into the landfill, it can take a million years to break down. So it's kind of crazy. So, so I kind of had this idea of monumentalizing the styrofoam by making them look like bronze sculptures, because, you know, bronze, of course, through history of art is always, or anything, or bronze and baby shoes or anything, it gives it like a importance, you know? And so there was, this transformation for me of taking something that was useless and after its purpose of being in a package, you know?
Yeah. The one time use kind of thing.
It's a strange thing where something is used for such a short period of time, but then it takes forever to go away, you know?
Looking at these pieces, I wouldn't have been able to tell you they were styrofoam.
I think, you know, that was the idea, is trying to give that illusion of a totally different material, you know?
It and looks like something you would find, like, at the bottom of the ocean. It's all the patina that you've achieved on there. It's amazing.
Giving it that weight and everything. It was actually really it's interesting to work with, because it's more, for me, it is like painting. But not like the other pieces that I don't paint on. These are more like making a painting, where I use adhesive and then I use these powders, and then I have to put certain powders in certain areas to create different effects, and then then adding the patinas, and then lastly I'll clear coat them.
It's quite a cool kind of switch. I mean, it's cool to see the history of the metal pieces that you found, and then to kind of see how you're putting your own sort of history into these styrofoam pieces. You know, archaeologists are going to dig them up years from now and wonder what the heck was going on.
It's funny, right? Because, you know, sadly, that's what you think about is you know, in a futuristic society, if they come here and they start unearthing things, they're going to find styrofoam and plastic in the landfills, you know? That's kind of a sad thing, you know? And so I guess that's kind of what I'm trying to say with these, really.
Yeah. No, it's a powerful piece, a powerful message. I'm glad you're part of this show, since it's everyone's kind of dealing with it in their own way.
And
you've got a good, cool take on it.
Yeah, I think a lot of us are really worried about this planet.
I hope visitors that come to this show will kind of see there are things to be hopeful for, especially with the incoming generations. And
that's all we can do, is do what we can and be hopeful, right?
I think artists have a unique opportunity to kind of bring a light, like a special focus onto things that people don't think about, you know, styrofoam, for instance, like you have.
Yeah.
So thank you, Mark. Thanks for your time today.
Well, thank you. And thanks for having me part of the show. And thanks to Katie and Kay.
You are listening to Katie and Kay's Express Yourself. Happy Friday. We're listening to Chicano Batman, This Land Is Your Land, from CORE's playlist for climate action. You are tuned into KDNK's Express Yourself. I'm Brian Colley, your co-host today with Amy Kimberly. The time is 4:32, and I am joined now by Allie Sanguilli, who just breezed through the door.
I did. I love to breeze through that door. I'm like, hey, I'm here. So fun to be in here. You're doing a great job, Brian.
Thank you.
I love it.
Thank you. What's going on at Batch these days?
Yeah, we're getting ready to open in a couple weeks. I'll be chatting with Raleigh about that next week a little bit more for the Sun. So, Yeah, keeping some things a little, you know, on the down low, secrets, surprises. I won't say when we're opening. I'm just going to open the door one day and there it will be. But yeah, we're going to be opening with a full bar. We'll have wine, cocktails. We're going to do pizza. I have some beautiful new artwork from yours truly, Brian Colley.
Thank you.
So it's looking good in there.
Yay.
And it's gorgeous weather. It's patio season coming up.
I know. It's so nice.
So nice.
Would you please introduce the next
piece
we've got?
Yeah. Here? So part one of my interview with Mirage was last Friday that Amy introduced and did so well. And, you know, I love drag. That is no secret. But not only do I just love, you know, the glitz and glam, but I love the theatrical part of it, the performance, the getting ready, not just the getting ready on the outside, but the inside, too. It takes a lot of, you know, bravery. It takes a lot of emotion and kind of. So yeah. Mirage and I talked about that. And, you know, we talked about a little bit about diversity in the drag world and not fitting into this like perfect box. And I think this part we're going to talk about pageantry, which I love because I'm a Texas girl and I think pageantry is just so entertaining and amazing. And so Mirage has several crowns that she holds as she's going for a big one coming up in May in the drag world. So we're going to talk about that. And yeah, she's a lovely, lovely human.
I can't wait to learn more about Mirage. Here we go with part two.
Drag shows seem to have become more common as a source of an entertainment show. And we see drag bingo, drag brunch, drag stand-up, you know, all that. For me, when I go to a drag show, I'm going because I'm enthralled with the glam, the performing, the sass, the, you know, really one of the most beautiful forms of pure raw expression that there is that's larger than life. When you're about to perform, what is your ideal audience and what is your worst audience? Do you feel like you need a specific type of energy to really perform the way you intend to? You can be honest.
I've performed from brunches to weddings or to parties to gay clubs, and my favorite environment to perform in, I would definitely say brunch shows, like morning shows where you can interact with the people and just what they're sitting down and watching, eating and watching a show. I love those because I feel like their energy for us is more appreciated, if that makes sense. Like they enjoy the art form of drag and I feel that they love it. They're there to watch a show. You know, when you're in a gay club, you feel like you have to work just as hard to impress them than you do in other, in a way, straight venues or, you know, brunch shows or other in venues like that.
Was there a time that you felt like, wow, this energy is really off and, you know, that consumed sort of your performance?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. There's been times where I've done shows at nightclubs and they're not feeling the performance at all, or they're just not as interactive as you want them to be. So it makes you feel like, wow, am I not doing my job properly? Am I not entertaining? And recently I had a conversation like that with a friend about gay club environments and like brunch environments. They definitely feel the same way. They're like, they're two different, energies and one appreciates you more than the other.
Sure. Yeah. I can see how that would be. Yeah, that would be difficult if you weren't getting that vibe down. To your crowns, you were Miss Gay Pride of All of Colorado 2019. Let me know if I'm getting anything wrong here. Enchanted Showgirl at Large 2019. and Miss Colorado Continental 2019. Looks like we're missing a year there because of COVID.
So, yeah. Now I'm still currently the reigning.
Oh, you are? Okay. So now you're headed to Miss Gay United States at Large pageant and Gay United States Icon pageant. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So you've got some crowns and you're headed for more. Tell us about those accomplishments and sort of the road to get there. And what is it like to prep for a pageant of those levels?
I'm a former first and a competitor second.
Mm-hmm.
So I love performing, of course. But there's something about doing competitions and just competing for a title that intrigued me so much. I think I was meant to, I would say, to do pageants in a way.
Okay.
And getting prepped for them, it's a very fun but stressful experience.
I can imagine.
When I first started, I didn't know the much more the resources that I have, luckily. But it was definitely trying to find people to work with and see if they can make your vision come true. And also, like I said, it takes a lot of money to compete in pageants. A lot. Luckily, if you can find a way to work a budget around there, it's definitely very helpful.
Yeah. Being from Texas, I know about pageants, and that is a lot, like you said, a lot of money, a lot of work, and it's pretty serious. When you were crowned Miss Gay Pride of all of Colorado, what was going through your head, and who was your biggest support team for that?
When I was crowned Miss Gay Pride, there was a lot of things going on in my head. Nerve, joy. I'm my biggest saboteur, like RuPaul likes to say. I like to think that I'm the voice in my head is always telling me, you're not going to do good. You're not going to win. So just expect failure.
Mm.
But when I was crowned, I was very surprised because there was a couple other girls that did such an amazing job that I was toe-to-toe with. So when I was crowned, it was just an amazing feeling like, oh, I did it. You know, all my hard work paid off. And my biggest support system, I would say, would have to have been my drag family.
Mm-hmm.
They were there through the whole experience, helping me with idea concepts and getting backstage and helping me get dressed, letting me borrow jewelry for whatever category I needed. They were really there, even backstage, like helping me calm my nerves. They were really there helping me throughout the whole process.
And was that something that your family was involved in as well?
Yes, I would definitely say they were a big part.
Because, I mean, that seems, you know, to go from, you mentioned earlier, you were 15 when you first started dressing in drag and doing drag. And then all of a sudden, you're winning all these pageants. I mean, that's got to be such an amazing feeling, you know, to show your family. Like,
it's amazing to show at least my mother. Mm-hmm. Like, look, I can turn this hobby that you think is just a hobby into a career, and I could be very successful at it.
Great. And so when is the next big pageant, the Miss Gay United States at Large? When can we
Miss
expect
Miss Gay United States at Large is going to be May 20th
okay.
to the 24th. And it's going to be in Roanoke, Virginia.
Okay.
And I still don't know the club yet, but when I get more information, I will definitely be posting it and keeping updated for people that live in Roanoke and want to go watch an amazing pageant.
Oh, my gosh.
If they want to travel, they can for sure come down and
oh my
watch
gosh.
An amazing competition.
I would die. Do you know if they're going to have it virtual for people that can't travel during that time yet?
I can for sure figure that out for you, and I can send you a link so you can watch the pageant.
We would love that. We would absolutely love that. I remember a post on your social media a ways back in 2020, and in it you had said, quote, "Being a plus-size Latino individual in the LGBTQ community, I felt out of place for not being a skinny white gay." You mentioned breaking the stigma for the next generation. Can you dive into that for us? Because that is not something that seems like it is talked about enough.
When I made that post, I was definitely in my feelings and in my head on not feeling as appreciated. You know, when I go on Instagram, I see these posts of people being admired, and most of the posts of the queens that are being admired are blonde hair, blue eyes, skinny, really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's rarely ever hard to see someone that looks like me on social media, you know. And if they do, they are looked at as not being as, oh, as fierce as, let me throw out a name, like Aquaria. No, there's no one's going to be just as good as Aquaria. And it really sometimes makes me feel down that the representation is not there.
Mm-hmm. But you're helping that. You're just talking about it is really the first step.
Oh, definitely. I feel like if we bring it out to the light and make people know that we need to change what drag looks like, we need to have different representations, because there could be a child like me in the world that looks just like me and feels there's not a place for them because I don't look like this certain type of entertainer or this, I don't have the look.
Well, I think you look amazing, and I think you have a beautiful inside and out personality as well. The Roaring Fork Valley has a growing LGBTQ youth presence. We have organizations like Gay for Good, Aspen Out, and of course everyone's favorite weekend of the year in Aspen, Gay Pride Week. So we're seeing the youth be more active and more outspoken. They actually hosted First Friday Parade the year before when Candy Warhol was at our drag brunch, and the kids were all in charge of it, and it was really beautiful. So we've seen that more in the Valley. What age were you when you came out, and what made you decide drag is for me and this is going to be a major part of my life?
When I came out, I was around 15, 14 years old. I like to say that I really didn't come out. I was always this flamboyant, gay little child since day one that I can remember. But actually saying the words, hey, I'm gay, was around that time. Okay. And when I decided to fully just live the art of drag was around that time as well. I was just like, I already love dressing up and entertaining. Might as well acknowledge it as a thing right now. You know, let me just live a full fantasy in a way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's very inspiring for the youth too, that are, you know, sort of struggling with that, to see people like you, like, you know, just going for it and winning crowns, winning pageants.
Mm-hmm.
And so what words do you have for, you know, our LGBTQ youth or anyone of any age that is struggling to celebrate or even find their identity?
I would say the way you feel inside, if you feel like you are a flamboyant little gay child, definitely embrace that. Never be ashamed of being who you are. Because if you hide it, the more you hide it and the more you suppress it, in the future it will end up coming back and making you feel like angry in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you weren't able to be your true self.
Sure.
So whatever anybody says, just if you feel some type of way inside, just express it. Don't ever hide it for anybody. Because at the end of the day, it's just going to make you feel like, wow, I could have been myself the whole time and I would have been better off.
Right. Like a missed opportunity in your lifetime.
Yeah.
How can our listeners follow you and keep up with you? And what are you up to right now? Because it seems like slowly drag is being able to be in person with performing. So how can we support you and the community of drag that has clearly been hit so hard with this loss of in-person performance?
Well, you can definitely find me on Facebook under Mirage Delamore Shears.
Okay.
I'm also on Instagram under Mirage_Delamore. And if you want to see, if you are ever in Denver, you can come down to the Zeppelin Station in Lodo. Starting March 27th, we're going to start having a drag brunch.
Oh, good.
Yes. Every Saturday.
Okay.
Starting the 20th of March.
Wow, that's going to be amazing. I think, you know, finally being able to be back in person, and especially for, you know, your audience too. That's probably going to be an amazing energy for you all.
Definitely. It's very exciting. It feels like it's the first day of school. Like, oh my God, I can't wait to be on that stage and, you know, show everybody the new clothes that I got and everything I've been working on for the past couple months.
Right, exactly. And we hope to, you know, be able to do a drag brunch again here and more work with you all. So I'm looking forward to, you know, having you and Candy and Lala and whoever come over to Carbondale and just be a part of our community. We're looking forward to that. So
definitely. I can't wait till you guys bring us out there and we can party with you guys.
Oh my gosh. We party really hard. Show. Yeah. I got to say the drag brunch that I put together was, and I've been doing events for a very long time. That was the most detailed, most, you know, the most work, the most energy, the most incredible event that I have ever hosted alongside Gay for Good, Aspen Out, and Carbondale Arts. And I think that experience is something that people are still talking about. So we will certainly have you gals back up here.
For sure. And thank you for bringing drag to your community and exposing us to not a different type of community, you know?
Right.
We're used to, most of us drag queens are just used to like the city living. So going out to a town out in the mountains
right.
is amazing.
Right.
And
yeah.
being able to meet people.
Well, we're lucky to have a really welcoming community here, that's for sure. And lastly, if you were a real housewife, what would your tagline be?
Okay, let's paint a picture right now. I turn around, I have an apple in my hand, or whatever fruit they're going to give us. I turn around and I say, I'm not bad, I'm just built that way.
I love it. That's perfect. I love it. You killed it. Well, Mirage, it's been amazing talking to you, and thank you for your time. I know you are a busy bee, so we look forward to chatting with you more and having you in person soon.
Thank you so much. I can't wait to be down there and be able to finally meet you guys
yes.
in person.
Yes, not through a computer screen.
Right.
Well, good luck with your first performances back, and we will definitely be following you to the Miss Gay United States at Large pageant, and best of luck.
All right. a little Sylvan Esso for this beautiful Friday afternoon. That's also another cut off of Songs for Climate Change, or Climate Action, I believe it is. And this was curated by Max Scott and Kendall Smith from Tacaw. Max Scott's from CORE. It's part of the Imagine Climate 2021, which is happening all this month. Guys should check it out. You can find it on Spotify or at the CORE website. You know, speaking of CORE, we are going to bring them on tonight. We are doing a virtual First Fridays. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been a while. I was just thinking about those.
I was hoping we'd never have to do one again, actually.
But it's going to be a good, the weather's so nice. Everyone's hopefully going to be, you know, ready to jump back into spring, and it's going to be good.
Well, coming up on the virtual First Fridays, which you can find at Thunder River Theater Company at their webpage, takes you to the Thunder Stream. So you just click that Thunder Stream link, or you can probably click to it from the Carbondale Arts Facebook page. We have it's all over Facebook, or you could go to YouTube and plug in Thunder Stream. But tonight we are going to interview Max Scott and Kendall Smith and talk about this playlist and, like, how do you come up with these songs for action?
So cool. What a great playlist. And Max Scott is also a KDNK board member, too. So he's all over the place.
He's diving in. I want to note that the my face is about to come down.
I saw it.
On CMC.
Is my face already down?
You're down. Brian's down already. Flash is holding somewhat strong up there. Greg Albrecht's still up there.
I saw those beautiful faces.
Yeah, it was awesome. So also coming up on that, we will have the fashion show, the best of. This is big, you guys. You guys want to catch it? The best of the best. So there's about a minute clip from every show over the last 10, 11 years, though I think Oz may not have downloaded correctly. But I'm going to tell you guys, it's going to be so fun to watch and just remind us that March usually is fashion show.
I know.
March,
I was thinking about that today. I was like, wow, it's been two fashion shows that we've missed now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like crazy, but we're moving forward. Yeah, and that will be really exciting. Where can you watch that?
At Thunder River Theater.
Okay.
By the Thunderstream.
Or Thunderstream.
Mm-hmm. On Thunderstream.
They have a YouTube channel as well, if you look up Thunder River Theater. Check it out from 6 to 7, right?
6 to 7 tonight. And we will also be looking, checking in at Brass Anvil and Atina.
Nice.
And getting some good recipes. So we've got that. And then also coming up in March, we've got the Fashion of Food.
Oh, it's going to be so fun and wild, and I can't wait for the photos. There's a really cool fashion show shoot that Amy and her team have put together at different restaurants around town.
Yep, just a fun way to keep the fashion show in the public eye, and then promote our restaurants, who hopefully this is like the final stretch of hardship, and hopefully soon we'll be able to be at greater capacities. We'll be able to be outside. So we just wanted to give them a little boost and give the fashion show a little boost. So it's just fun. Sometimes you just need to get creative.
Yeah. And ours is, I think the batch one is next Saturday. It's going to be Allie O'Neill, Thimble Fox's line. It's going to be real sassy.
Yeah, a lot of sassy stuff. And this also promotes local designers whose clothes we never really got to see. We did never get to see Brian either as the emperor.
Man. Stay tuned, everyone.
Can we make sure that happens? Please.
Well, it's been a real pleasure to be here with everyone. It's a beautiful weekend. We hope everyone goes out and really enjoys themselves. Spring Gulch is still going strong. The desert is calling. The ski mountain is filled with snow still. And, I'm not sure if there's a lot of – there's some art to take in. But other than that, I don't know that there's a lot of action going on. All right, here we go. Happy Friday.
Thanks, everybody.